UBC Thunderbirds from the 47 of the Rams. They go four receivers right, a tight end in there as well, and Shariq Khan with his hands on his knees in behind his quarterback, Gabe Olivares, looking to throw. Olivares hit as he throws, down the middle, and it's a catch on the skinny post. Nice delivery there. Kellogg on the catch as he's become a prime target, but boy, did Olivares stand in there and take a shot right in the midriff.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
And just ahead of my interview with Jim Mullen, the president of Football Canada, about the big summit they've got with all levels of football in this country, I wanted to give a shout out to my sponsors, Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan, Mark Greshner Photography, also Paul Waldo over at Royal LePage in Regina, Face First Medical Aesthetics above Gabo's on Dewdney Avenue in a thing they call Beauty Avenue there, also Boys Next Door Window Cleaning with Nathan and Landon, Double Z Ag Sales out there in Weyburn, Riviera Ag Sales in Radville, SAS Selects Football out there in Moose Jaw at the Yara Center. Yes, let's start with a little lighthearted quarantine, shall we?
The CDC is recommending that everyone wear a face mask in public, but what about gloves, the popular protective equipment that some say could be doing more harm than good?
Keep your distance in every instance. In my insistence, stay inside. And if you need some, gonna give you my gloves. Gonna give you my gloves. Oh, I bought a whole lot of gloves. I bought a whole lot of gloves. I bought a whole lot of gloves.
You'll be wearing rubber gloves. Do you own rubber gloves?
I rent them. I have a lease with an option to buy.
Clean for me, girl.
And here on Growing the Game with Ballsy, pleased to be joined by my friend Jim Mullen, president of Football Canada. Jim, I hope I find you well and COVID-free right now. Seems like we're getting a second wave everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I think I tangled with something a lot earlier in this whole progression, but I'm certainly at 100% today, as I hope you are as well.
Yeah, I am. Okay, so Jim, I noticed we are getting a summit of all the key leaders in Canadian football, right from the CFL on down. How big is this? How big is this football summit, which begins with, I think it's five calls, and the first one is this week on Thursday, you told me before we rolled tape here. So how big is it to get all these players together, even if it is over a Zoom call?
In some cases, it took a lot of work, and in some cases, it was an automatic yes. And so in the case of two of the participants, they were all in right away. One of the participants, it took quite some time in terms of coaxing them in, but finally, I think it's dawned on everyone that we have some challenges in front of us. This first set of five calls, is focusing on the national conversations that we have. That's why the CJFL, U Sports and their conferences, and the CFL are a part of this. We will have a second set of calls in January, which allow us to drill down to the regional relationships, high school football, women's football, flag football. And even though we're going to touch on some diversity issues that we have right now, the real focus on diversity issues will be in that second set of calls. So in terms of how big this is, I think this is probably 5 to 7 years overdue.
Mm-hmm.
And with this pause with COVID, we have a special opportunity. Chances like this only come around about once every 60 years on average. You know, the CFL it really came to pass in 1958. That was the last major reorganization. I mean, I guess you could talk around 1965 for university football, finally getting a national championship together after a few years of trying. There was some very positive change there. 1909 is the last time before that.
Wow.
Talking about the Grey Cup game and that sort of organization. So, you know, we have this opportunity in a sport that is extremely siloed, where individual groups all the way from the CFL down to the smallest community association have challenges in terms of working with other associations, working with other groups, finding ways to be on the same page with other stakeholders. The intent of this is, at least in the first phase, is to get the four major national groups aligned with their efforts, because we will have fewer resources to work with coming out of COVID. I have no question about that. And we are going to have some challenges coming out of COVID, but we're all doing some good things. So let's make sure we don't tread on each other's toes and row this boat in the same direction.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. Jim Mullen, president of Football Canada, joining me here as we're getting that summit together. Jim, what needs to happen at the grassroots level to have more eyeballs on it and have people pay attention to it? Right from, you know, right, I guess really right from high school all the way through university, junior, which gets us to continue to have those eyeballs to the CFL. Because the CFL, I mean, let's be honest, the CFL is in trouble. And I know here in Saskatchewan, we're good. We always love our Rough Riders. But when the Rough Riders are doing well and when the Rough Riders are rolling like they were, what, between probably, oh, I want to say 04 to 2013, 14. There's a couple of years hit and miss there, but for the most part, there was a 10-year stretch where it was really humming. Football was the highest it's ever been here, even at the grassroots level. So when the Riders are rolling, people are caring. So first of all, how do we get things going at the grassroots level?
Well, you know, it's what you described there about highs and lows. I guess it's like farming with good years and bad years, right?
Right.
And that there are a number of bad years that I can remember in Saskatchewan,
right,
not just on the field, but off the field as well. And the way you described the effect that other groups have on each other kind of describes a pyramid. That's good when things are going really well, but really this is a wheel. This is an ecosystem that we have in this game of football. This is getting kids in at a young age, engaging their parents, showing up to games, progressing through the system, staying in as players, becoming officials, becoming coaches, and moving through the system. There's various stages that you can associate in your life with this game. And looking at it as a wheel, looking at it as an ecosystem, that is what gets this game through some of the rough patches that we've seen in Saskatchewan in the past years, in addition to other places like out here in British Columbia. You know, there's some breaks in the chain in terms of that ecosystem. We've got a wheel out here that is all spokes and no wheel, and that doesn't get you through the mud very well, does it? In terms of high school doing one thing, in terms of the community guys doing another thing, in terms of a challenge with communication with the various stakeholders around the table. That's one of the goals of this summit series, is to ensure that we are all working in that same direction. And that's why it's also in two phases, to focus on that grassroots thing once we get the national thing taken care of. I do think that one of the great things for grassroots football, which is one of the two main points for the operation of Football Canada, is our national teams. Mm-hmm. And what we do at the national level at the Canada Cup. We've got the world's greatest world junior football team, period. Better than the Americans. 7-6 in gold medal games. Two-time defending champions. We haven't done a good enough job of getting that message out within the football community and outside of the football community. That's an event that needs to be on television in Canada. The East-West Bowl should be turned into something bigger. It should be turned into an event. You should be able to drive tickets through it. It's the best seniors in the country. Let's turn that into an international game and put it on TV and have something aspirational for kids to work their way towards, who are already finding their way into the grassroots programming through our programming at Football Canada, and in the case of your province, through Football Fest. Let's make sure the Vanier Cup and the Canadian Bowl have an adequate platform to work off of so they can get their message out nationally. All of these things, I think, are critical in terms of inspiring the grassroots, having something aspirational, creating energy in that ecosystem that finds its way up to the CFL and makes it the pride of a nation, Canadian football the pride of a nation.
Well, and that's where I see it. I'm not against Randy Ambrosi here, just switching gears, but tying into what you said. I'm not against Randy Ambrosi always looking to get better and trying different things, i.e. the global initiative. But the problem I have is we haven't got it nailed down in our country, even as it relates to, you mentioned the Vanier Cup, 2011 and 2012 were two of the best Vanier Cups in terms of popularity and people going to the games. That 2011 one in BC was one of the best I've watched ever. You were very instrumental in helping organize that, so I should give you your just due there. But it just pops up. The semifinals popped up. Thank God CBC came forward and did it on CBC.ca. And then all of a sudden the Vanier pops up on a Saturday weekend sports on CBC. And if you're a hardcore fan, okay, it's on, I'll watch it. But the average fan isn't watching it because they don't know where to find it. And if you follow these kids coming up, then when they go to your CFL team, you're going to follow them. More eyeballs on the CFL. Like you said, it's broken somewhere. We got to fix it.
No question. Like when you look at 2011, there were 975,000 people watching that game on TV, and it was a lower bowl sellout. In 2012, there were 39,000 people in the stadium. They maintained an audience of 1.3 million and had a peak audience in the last 15 minutes of that game of 3.1 million viewers. The last year Sportsnet did the game, which was 2 years ago, I never got the numbers from the CBC. Their overnight numbers had 93,000 people watching that game in English Canada. That's unacceptable. The numbers are far more robust in Quebec in the 225 range. But 93,000 people watching a national championship of the number two sport in this country at the university level cannot pass.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. So, you know, you're absolutely right. We have something broken there. I think we need to create some energy around national championships. How does that look? Well, that's what this discussion is all about. Is it the Vanier Cup pairing with the Grey Cup? Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Is it the Vanier Cup and the Canadian Bowl getting together a week after the Grey Cup, for example, and creating a great closer to the Canadian football season? Maybe that's what it is. Hopefully we can have those discussions and have some frank discussions, and everybody in that room can be open to new ideas, because if they are not open to new ideas and are unwilling to move from their entrenched positions, this is not going to achieve much.
Are you skeptical that they won't be open? Like, are you worried they won't be open? Because you know what happens when you're not progressing, you're dead.
Well, I think you just said it better than me, Paulsy. I think that, you know, as I was referring to, you know, a chance every 60 years, right? Every 60 or 70
right.
years to reset a sport. COVID has given us this opportunity. It's one of the very few silver linings that this virus has given us, in that everyone is looking for ways to innovate. Everyone is turning to compatriots and competitors alike and asking questions and trading stories and looking for new ways to do their business and new ways to be prepared as we emerge from this virus, and football is no different. The biggest challenge I see is that, as a sport, we should have been on the same page long ago. It amazes me that we've been so divided in this country. If it makes logical sense and people are open, the same way I see the rest of society being open to these possibilities, I think we'll be able to get something accomplished.
Well, we got the right man in the Football Canada seat, the president, Jim Mullen. Thanks for this, Jim. I appreciate it. I look forward to getting your feedback, your report, and seeing where we go from here.
Anytime, Ballsy.
Time now for our pick six with Brendan Tamman, former GM of the Rough Riders and Blue Bombers, now in the Montreal Alouettes front office. Brendan, are you still well? Are you still okay through this COVID-19?
Yeah, heck yeah. Yeah, just, do what they ask you to do and stay by the rules and stay quiet and do your job and you're fine.
How about, speaking of jobs, how about employment? You still okay? You're still on the payroll?
Yeah, we're still looking for football players, so that's always a good thing because, guys like me and guys like myself around the league are still trying to do that. So, yeah, still so far so good.
So growing up, I was my youth was determined by Wayne Gretzky, okay, by the likes of Joey Walters and then later Fairholme and Elgard, Warren Moon, those kind of guys, and Van Halen. Today, Eddie Van Halen dies at the age of 65. Who kind of defined your youth?
That's a really good question. I mean, I'm a little bit advanced than you age-wise, I guess. But, I mean, I remember Van Halen when they were going big-time music-wise. They were on top of it. I might date myself a little bit, go with Canadiana a little bit with Bachman Turner Overdrive.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty trendy when I was still fairly young. And then sports-wise, I was a big Steelers fan, generally Pittsburgh and the whole Steelers, Penguins, and Mario came into it. So
yeah.
I had a lot of influence by those guys. And Billy Martin and George Steinbrenner are always like with the Yankees when I grew up. So that's sort of where I got my inkling from.
Awesome. Brendan, COVID, we'll start with Ballsy's pick six here for the Sasselex football program operating out of there at the Yara Center in Moose Jaw. Thanks to Zelko and Deb for helping to build the Stars of Tomorrow today and giving us some football through some challenging times here in the Regina area. COVID-19, do you think the NFL is going to get 16 games in, Brendan Tamman? And does it look bad chasing the cash?
I think they'll find a way to get their schedule in somehow, some way. I mean, they were a little bit of a rough patch last week, but they got through it okay, I think. So, no, I don't fault them for – I look at it the other way, Ballsy. I think with everything going on in the world between the COVID and politics and just negativity all over wherever you look, I think people that like sports are gladly enjoying watching NFL football. So – whether they're chasing the cash, that's whoever's opinion, but I just enjoy seeing them play football.
For what it's worth, I agree 100% with you. The rules skewed this much against the defense in both the CFL and the NFL. It seems you can't make a tackle, you can't touch a guy. Is that good or bad for the game that it's turned so offensive?
Well, I think, this started to change back in the CFL, I think, if I remember right, it was 2014 or... Yeah, I think it was 14, maybe it was 15, when they put in basically the DBs couldn't touch guys running down past 5 yards, which really made it tough on the defenders. So, the other thing on top of that all is the whole practice habits in football has changed, no matter, and that Ballsy being in football the way you see it. I have no idea how guys learn how to tackle anymore because you never can practice it because you're never in pads. So, a lot of guys get knocked with, they can't tackle. Well, they don't get a chance to practice it, so that makes it very difficult. So, I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, you still got guys like Belichick in football that know how to play defense, as they proved last night. So I think it's really challenging, even more so for coaches, to try to get your defenders as good as they can be.
I just find that it's kind of turning into the NBA with a three-point shot. You don't have a guy that can make a 10-foot jumper anymore. You either got to be under the rim or a three-point shot. I'm finding in the, it's almost turning into flag football. We're dangerously close, which I think could get boring. Like, I know offense sells tickets. I know a couple years ago when Chris Jones were here, everybody was bored with the 16-9 games. But on the other side of things, it can get watered down too, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's like everything, Balls. You need a balance. I mean, you can't have 50 to 48 scores every week because that's arena football. You got to be able to play defense at times. And I think ultimately when championships are won, the defense stands up and makes a big statement, as in like Winnipeg last year, for example, in the Grey Cup.
If you were spending money in the CFL, obviously you're going to spend it on quarterbacks, although I think they're going to have to look at making a lot less in the new-look CFL. Obviously, O-linemen get a lot of money, especially if they're Canadian, just the way the ratio is set up. And then I've always said this, Brendan, if you can cover, if you can be a defensive halfback and cover, you will get paid well. Would you agree?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you bring that up because you can have arguments two ways on that. Like, I agree. I'm a big DB guy too myself. I think, especially with halfbacks, they're very hard to find and they make a lot of money. The argument on the other flip side of that, Ballsy, which I get too thrown my way, is that if you don't have a pass rush, the DBs, doesn't matter how good you are, they're going to get beat eventually. So it's like everything. You can look at it one way or the other. I personally think defensive linemen are a little bit more, especially the ends, are more easier to find than, quote, true cover DBs that can really cover as well as you should, especially in the Canadian game, and so, they're not easy to find.
So when you're looking for football players, you talked about looking for football players, Brendan Tamman. When you're looking at an American game, how can you tell that guy will be able to cover in the CFL? Because when they come up here, pre-snap motion, mm-hmm. they're covering, you know, they're covering on a tarmac. I know my son's making the switch to DB down there. He said, Dad, the thing I really notice, you really got to pay attention to formations down here, like formational football. When they come up to the CFL, it must be just like their head's swimming. So as a talent evaluator, how do you know that that guy should transition good, pretty good up here?
Well, it sort of ties into what I just said about, like, generally speaking, you can find corners. Like, corners one-on-one, go cover, play basic fundamental football and, you know, cover the guy in front of you. That's pretty easy. The challenge is finding the halfbacks, the guys that play inside, because they're playing with two-way goals all the time. Guys can go inside, guys can go outside. And I think that's where you really get tricky. And when you evaluate guys in the States, until you really get them up here, and I think Jim Popp had a really good idea back in the day, is that, and this is going to sound strange, but I understood why he did it, is that he spent a lot of time in the Arena League back in the day looking at their DBs because they had to play a two-way go game, I call it. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of one thing I sort of took on, you know, based on experience in the league. And like I say, corners, ends, pretty basic to find. It's the halfbacks and the true difference makers that are a lot challenging. And it's, until you actually get them in your lineup and get them in the CFL game, it's very hard to prognosticate if they can do it or not.
So I had started a number two in Ballsy's pick six with Brendan Tamman talking about the rules. We'll wrap it up quickly. What's worse, the no-yards penalty in the CFL or the defensive illegal contact penalty in the NFL? Like, you could be second and 26. You get an illegal holding or a contact penalty in the secondary, it's a five-yard penalty and an automatic first down. I think that's absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, I'm sure there's reasons for it. I mean, the five-yard penalty and the automatic first down is a little bit odd because it's, like you said, it could be second and 25, and it's a five-yard penalty and they get a first down. I guess they're trying to not accentuate holding the receivers down there. So, I mean, I don't mind the no-yards rule in our league. So, to answer your question, I guess it's the NFL one.
And what do you think of the NFL kickoff? It's mostly useless. I know, of course, that we had the watermelon kick from the Cowboys, and that Duvernay guy ran back a kick for Baltimore the other day, but that's about it. It's usually through the back of the end zone.
Yeah, to be honest with you, it's 90% of the time it's a waste of time. So, they're obviously trying to get it out of their game. It's pretty clear. So, I don't know why they just don't take it out of their game, because there's not really a lot of it coming out of it.
I know it's a dangerous thing, and it's probably the most that and the punt return the most dangerous in football. You're not going to take the punt return out, I guess. Although I guess you could just say, hey, we're giving up the ball, and then they flip the field 30 yards or 40 yards, whatever an average punt would be. But would you be an advocate to get rid of the kickoff or keep it in the game and for the sake of the NFL, move it back once again so the ball stays in play?
Well, whatever the NFL does, they do. I'm thinking Canadian-wise, and I think it's one of, you know, obviously I don't want to put player safety ahead of it, but I think kickoff returns are still an important part of our game. Mm-hmm. You know, when you evaluate kickers, a guy that can kick off like we used to have in Montreal, like Beattie, he was really good at kickoffs. And I know that sounds really weird, but for him to kick it to your goal line, you're going to have a 35-yard return to get it to the 35. So I think there's still a lot of strategy in the kickoff game up here, but again, if it's safety-related, I don't want to obviously overcome that if it's in lieu of a kickoff. So depending on player safety, I'm still an advocate of it.
Number three on Ballsy's pick six, quarterbacks. Are you surprised how good guys like Joe Burrow in Cincinnati and Justin Herbert in Los Angeles with the Chargers coming over from Oregon? Are you surprised how well they're doing, especially with no training camps, no preseason games, no real off-season workouts?
Yeah, I think it's a real credit to those young guys that can come in and do it, like you say. I think without the training camp and the exhibition games, like you mentioned, I think that's a real challenge for any young guy at any position. And for those guys to do it at the quarterback spot is really a feather in their hat. So I think, I mean, a lot of people wouldn't be too surprised about Burrow because he was the number one pick. But I think the kid in L.A. With Herbers, I think he's turning a few heads just on, wow, he's pretty good. And a lot of people didn't give him that sort of evaluation coming out of college. So, yeah, it's really impressive on both their parts.
Now, Tom Brady had five touchdown passes to five different receivers last Sunday. It's his eighth career five TD pass game. He was 43 years and 2 months when he did it last Sunday. Peyton Manning in his last career five touchdown pass game in 2014 was 38 years and 7 months. Are you surprised Brady's still getting it done at a high level?
No. No, not at all because of this, Ballsy. I think, and you know this too, is that when you see him in whatever it was, middle of February, middle of March, throwing the ball to his teammates, you've got a real driven, eager guy to get on the field and prove a lot of people that he still has game. And when you have that motivation behind you with the ability that he has, no, it doesn't surprise me one bit.
Aaron Rodgers is playing with a chip on his shoulder. Now, some can say it's because they brought Jordan Love in, the quarterback, instead of getting him a receiver. Did you ever bring a guy in just to light a fire under somebody on your team already?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe not as much to light a fire, but it's to avoid complacency seeping in into your position. If there's some guys that, you know, think they've got their contracts and they're, you know, they're clear till the end of the year and I can coast. If you can, you try to always upgrade your team no matter when it was. And I think as a GM, you're responsible for doing that just to keep your guys motivated and as on top of their game as they can be.
Hey, back to Tom Brady for a second. At 40, 43, it's amazing. But I think Damon Allen, what he did in the CFL was equally amazing. And here's why I say it. Because Damon Allen, yeah, he may have been a little bit younger when his career ended, like a year or two. Like, I think he ended at 42. But the guy was still using his legs and running around. Tom Brady's got all the mobility of a phone booth. You know what I mean? Like he was an athlete. I think what Damon Allen did was pretty impressive, too. Almost equal to Tom Brady. I know we'll compare apples and oranges, NFL to CFL, but just athletic ability, it's pretty impressive what Damon Allen did.
Yeah, I was fortunate to be with Damon a couple different times in his career, and he was probably, I don't know if I was around a better athlete, period. Like, he was so fluid, and when he got out of the pocket, I'm not talking about a quarterback, I'm just talking about an athlete. He was phenomenal, and when you combine the way he threw the ball on top of that, and the way he was so durable, like, he missed very few games throughout his career, if I'm not mistaken, and that's a huge credit to Damon. And he had that uncanny ability that he just didn't take a lot of true hits per se. He just had that inkling that if he was going to get hit, he got rid of that ball. And I understand what you're saying, Ballsy. I mean, yeah, they're two different guys, but in the Canadian Football League's history records, I think Damon had a hell of a career.
Yeah, Bill O'Brien is fired in Houston. Now, Bill O'Brien, the coach, had a pretty good record. Like, he won four division titles. I think he was 52-48 in the regular season. But he became the GM, made a bad trade for Laremy Tunsil, giving up a couple of big draft picks. And then, of course, we know what he did with DeAndre Hopkins, sending him to Arizona. Is a coach and a GM the same guy? Is that too much for one guy? And does it cloud your view when you're holding both caps?
That's an interesting one, Ballsy. Again, I can only go with the Canadian game aspect of it, and I just know from being an ex-GM in the CFL, there's a lot of work that goes into that job. I can't imagine how you can be a head football coach and do that job. And to be frank and honest with you, Ballsy, the reason most of those coaches want to do it that way is because they just want the power. They don't want the work, trust me. They don't want to negotiate 100 contracts,
yeah.
But they want the power, so no GM's overruling them, and that's exactly why it happens that way. But, it all depends on the structure of your organization. If you want a guy that has the power and be a coach and GM, yeah, you anoint one that way. But I personally, in reality of doing the jobs, there's no way a head coach can do a GM's job and a head coach's job.
Well,
I think
you were on the right track there, because O'Brien was calling plays and doing all the stuff. He was basically running the offense. Like, he was basically doing everything, and sometimes that is too much. But it's interesting, because you were a GM, you had coaches. Can you imagine being like a guy like Chris Jones a couple of years ago, when, you know, you got to go into the negotiation room and tear a strip off the guy, or tell him he's not worth that much, and then go out on the field and pump up his tires and tell him he's a great player?
Yeah, and I give Wally a lot of credit for that in his career, because he was able to do that and be pretty darn good at what he did.
Yeah.
And I that's very difficult for me, like what you just described, to think of an easy way to get that accomplished. But the guys that are successful that can do it, hey, more power to them. I just think it's really hard.
How do you tell a guy that, hey, you're not what you're worth, what you think you're worth? How tough is that?
You know, my famous line was, hey, we know you're worth more than what we're able to offer you here, but that's what we can afford. That was always my famous line, you know. And honestly, most guys were worth more than what we were paying them, to be honest with you. But when you have to put a cap into play, you know, that's where it becomes challenging. And you know what? Most players get it. Like, they understand when their game's not at the top of their level, and they know their value. They really do, I believe. Some of them get a little bit overinflated, but I think realistically, most guys get it. And, you know, it's not that hard in some ways.
Number 5 in Ballsy's Pick 6 for the Sasalex football program, and guest starring Brendan Tamman with the Montreal Alouettes. Washington coach Ron Rivera appeared to struggle while leaving the field at halftime. He had to sit on the bench a couple of times. He's battling cancer. Very heroic, very courageous, obviously an inspiration for his team. Have you ever been in a situation like that, where you had a colleague that's sick and struggling but still wanted to work? And if you were in the GM chair in Washington, how would you handle, you know, the Ron Rivera situation? Because obviously he still wants to battle, but obviously he's not 100% too.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, generally speaking, the football people, and specifically coaches, they and you know this, Ballsy, they live and breathe that stuff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, you look back at, you know, Minnesota's head coach not too long ago with his eye issues,
yeah.
Zimmer.
Mike Zimmer, yeah.
There was no way he was missing any football games, even though he basically couldn't see out of the one eye for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's sort of, and I know Rivera's situation is way more significant than an eye injury, but it's tough, because you don't want to take away what they enjoy doing, but at the end of the day, it is about health for the most part. So, really fine line to play there. I don't recall anything specifically that I was involved with directly that I had to manage through that, but it's tough, because they're so driven and passionate. Sometimes you can't see the forest through the trees.
Yeah. And lastly, on Ballsy's Pick 6, Alex Singleton, big game-clinching pick 6 for the Eagles on Sunday Night Football. And Tavon Campbell of the Regina Rams, playing for the Chargers, now made some plays. You know, let's touch on this a bit. First off, Tavon Campbell's a guy that was never, like, I don't remember him being a breakout star with the Rams. He was pretty good, but he wasn't a guy where you're like, wow, this is an NFL talent. And he wasn't a real superstar in the CFL. How does that happen?
Yeah, it's, again, first of all, it's a credit to Tavion to do that. You're right in what you described, because I remember being in the draft when he came out, and other than being extremely fast, he was really raw the way he played the game. Like, he had a lot of work to do. But to his credit, throughout the course of his career, you know, he got some time, I think, in Montreal for a while to play. But, you know, as an example off the top of my head, when I heard that name, you know, you think of a guy like Davis Sanchez when he was at the top of his game when he played. You know, Davis was pretty good, and he was a guy you had to keep monitoring. And Tavion really never got a chance to play that much. And maybe it's a great example of, hey, if you give a guy a chance to play, and the more he develops in his career, that's what you're going to get. And it's fascinating to me, because he's done so well for himself. If you would have told me to bet on that, I would have lost that bet. I can guarantee you that.
Goes to show you, being a talent evaluator is not an easy thing, right? It's not an exact science. Hey, so Alex Singleton, I like to call him the fake Canadian, because he got that birth certificate or the Canadian status because of his mom. But he gets that big interception. Where I want to go with this is, I've talked to guys that have played in both leagues, and they tell me, you know, zero through seven, like there's seven elite players on every NFL roster that would be head and shoulders above everybody else in the CFL. But other than that, there's not a huge difference. And I think we're starting to see more and more of that. Do you feel that way when you're looking at talent?
Well, I think, you know, yeah, I think the NFL just flat out just has more ability to get more of a group of good players together, where with the CFL, with our ratio and the money that we deal with, we don't have that ability to do it. Now, saying that, our players are darn good at what they do. We just don't have – the NFL flat just has more than what we have, but ours that we have are pretty darn good, generally speaking.
Yeah, for sure. And lastly, Brendan, just to throw an extra one in here, how do you see the draft operating this year? It's going to be weird. It's going to be a weird kind of situation here. We touched on this before when I had you on. You're watching tape, but you don't get to really do eyeball tests on these guys this year.
It's sort of an unknown yet, still ballsy, because there's still these rumblings that they're going to play some games or some version of games in the spring, and they're going to have some kind of combines and whatnot, and they're practicing right now. So you're going to have to, you know, piece things together as you go here. But, you know, it's sort of like going into a cave, and it's most of it's dark, and you don't really know what's behind these walls. But somewhere along the line, you'll get your answers. But we just got to take it step by step and day by day, and I'm sure it'll work out one way or the other. It's just going to be, the word is different, that's for sure.
When you're looking at the Canadian game and the CAN West, where's the strength in the positions maybe going into the 2021 draft? Like, where do we see, you know, there's a lot of good depth at this position?
Yeah, you know, I look at different, you know, for example, UBC's got two very good linebackers,
right,
as an example. Calgary's loaded with a couple different guys on O-line. Saskatchewan, you know, the typical, you know, they have that DB that's very good.
Mm-hmm. Lacombo, yeah.
I don't know if there's a position that stands out in my initial blush on the draft, and we'll go through it about 100 times more since we talk now. But in general, the Canada West has a lot of good prospects. Now, the interesting part about that, Ballsy, is will all these guys stay in the current year's draft, or will they back out to go to the next year's draft behind it? These are all things that you don't know, right?
Yeah. So, it's really,
we have a current draft list now, but to say that's not going to change significantly over the next few months or 6 months, it probably will a little bit.
Okay, so last question then. You know, when you're watching the tape and you're watching Canadian athletes more specifically, how much has it changed? How much better have these type of athletes gotten over the years? Say when you were, you know, first starting out in this game back in the day,
drastically, Ballsy, and you know that too. I think, you know, you've covered the Rams as much as you have. They're, you know, easier to describe like this: bigger, stronger, faster. That's the way I would describe it. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, the other thing on top of that people shouldn't overlook is the U-Sports done a great job of upgrading their programs and their facilities and just their whole coaching angle to these kids. So the quality and the level of U Sports football continues to go up. Now, with a pandemic hitting us, hopefully it can stay going that way. But, I mean, for example, a team like Guelph, I don't know if you've seen those facilities.
Oh, yeah, I was there with Ethan, yeah.
Like, in all honesty, they're better than some CFL facilities, and you probably know that.
Yep.
So, and I'm not talking about Saskatchewan's facilities, because that's a different animal, but you would have never seen that 10, 15 years ago in U Sports football. And it's just amazing. Laval is a machine out east. So I think if it continues to grow, and it's, who knows where it's going to go after this, but it was on a real nice path to really being a nice little good, solid program nationally across Canada.
Brendan, thanks for this. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, you're welcome.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.